Need a new set of optics? For more than a decade, Riton Optics has been providing optic solutions for hunters and shooters of all types and disciplines. Check out their Primal line for those products geared more towards us hunters. From binoculars and spotting scopes to your basic 3-9 scopes and longer range crossover models, the Primal line from Riton was made for hunters. Learn more at RitonOptics.com. That's Riton, R-I-T-O-N, Optics.com.
This is the OKest Hunter Podcast. Never pass on shooter bucks, if that's just me, a freezer. It's your tag, you hunt how you want. This is OKest Hunter.
Everybody, welcome back to the OKS Hunter Podcast, coming at you from Oconomowoc, Wisconsin. No Derek or Greg yet again this week. Those guys are living it up on spring break. Derek just got a monster hog down in Texas. I think he got two of them, but one is like, it looks like a small bear. It's insanely giant. It's actually a little disturbing how disgustingly big this thing is. And then Greg is out catching sharks, down in the Panhandle, Florida, somewhere, drinking a Yingling, living his best life. So those guys are MIA, which is great. They deserve to go do fun things. No one gets paid at OKS Hunter, so I can't be such a slave driver. Like, get your ass into the podcast studio. It's not how it works here. Come as you are kind of thing. And if you're listening for the first time, welcome to the show. I know we got a bunch of new YouTube subscribers from the Wisconsin Open Bells trade show we had just done, which is really a fun time. A lot of work. So if I seem like I'm a bit sweaty and disheveled, because I just, like, inside of 45 minutes, put the studio back together in here because everything was torn apart and migrated out to the Dells. So that's all back up and running. I did want to say, last week I promised everybody that we would announce the winner from the OKS Shed contest we did with Rack Hub and Shed Season. So I'll post it later to our story, and I'll message them directly in a DM. But just saying it out loud on the podcast, it's the last name. Let's see how this goes. Tyler Berthelsen. What? Tyler Berthelsen. B-E-R-T-H-E-L-S-E-N. Tyler Berthelsen. You are the winner of the OKS Shed contest, so you're going to get $500 worth of stuff from us and Rack Hub and Shed Season. So speaking of those guys, you can see our partners listed up in the upper right if you're watching live. Shout out to Rack Hub if you want to, display and decorate your house with your memories. It's a great option to do so, in addition to if you're doing shoulder mounts or, Euro mounts and all that jazz. It's just another way to get those memories put up on the wall. You can see it. I don't know where to point in here, but back by the, Jesus, I think I'm mirrored wrong. The Fred Bear drawing back there that Derek did, you can see an antler hanging on the wall. That's what that is. That's the Rack Hub RH1. So if you want to get some money saved on that, use code OHP or just go to rackhub.com/OKS and that discount will kick in automagically, whatever. Oh, I'm choking on my spit. Excuse me. So Spartan Forge, check those guys out. I don't have any major updates. I was just texting Bill today. He's just been busier than he's ever been his entire life, which is saying a lot since he used to be an officer in the Army intelligence tracking down terrorists. Obviously, building an app to do so with deer is taking up a lot of time. So he's working on the Cyber Scout stuff and some other things coming down the pike. Stay tuned, stay frosty, and use code OHP after you are done kicking the tires on the free membership. Make sure to go to SpartanForge.ai to enter that code in to save the 20%. And then Latitude, those guys are low on inventory right now, just getting stock back up for this coming hunting season. So there are some things you can purchase there. They were just at the trade show in the Dells, not with us, but they were there also. So stop by their booth and said hi. I know a couple of folks went over there and told them, OKS Hunter, told him to go over and all that jazz. So hopefully it's a good show for those guys as well. I haven't had a chance to catch up just yet, but been a busy couple of days getting all the trade show food out of my system and kind of coming back to life over here. So one of the other guys that was at the trade show, Jared Scheffler, is our guest tonight with Whitetail Adrenaline. And Jared, I got to say, I think it was like 10 years ago You are the first guest I ever had back when this podcast was called Where to Hunt. And I fucked up the beginning and I like got all nervous and weird and choked on saying your last name. And it was a whole thing. And so
I think I vaguely remember that, but I don't remember. I think I vaguely remember you having me on. I never recall. I can't recall what you're talking about. Serious, honest. So don't, you know.
Well, it's different because it was my first. So like, of course I remember, you know, it was a big deal for me. And back then it was, yeah, it would have been like 20, I think it's like 2013, the first episode of the Where to Hunt. It's not even around anymore because the podcast like platforms have like archived it because it was so long ago. So I think that episode's on our YouTube channel.
Okay.
And you've been on like maybe once or twice to talk about some tactics and early season stuff somewhere along the line. But not since we've done the rebrand in 2020. So we're, yeah, now we're rocking under the OKest brand, and that kind of picked up and caught steam. And I think it's I'm excited to talk to you today to just kind of work through some of that because
you're
such an exemplar in the space. Like, you've done something very, very different in a world where YouTube is being demonetized for having hunting content. Sponsorship dollars they come and go like the wind. They're very unstable. You've built a business around something that doesn't depend on those things or rely upon it. And it's the hardest way to go about doing something. I think the other ways are significantly easier and then potentially more attractive. It's a short mindset. You're playing the long game and those bets have worked out for you.
So
how was that? Like, did you, let's just go back to the beginning for a hot second here and talk about like, were people like, man, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? Why don't you do this? It'd be so easy. And like, how did you? Have the confidence, you know,
people telling you what you need to do are usually not the ones that are usually not. I mean, you know, I think even it looked probably crazy back in 07 to that's when we, Jim and I mainly, there's my buddy Al and Scott in there. I'm not sure. I don't think Lloyd made that video, but it was basically just us four kind of out bebopping around, having a good time, filmed the first video and then we're going to launch it on DVD. That was an era when DVDs were actually, it was hard to get them into retailers because they were sitting, they had sold, we talked about this just a little bit before before the opener, but, it kind of gave me flashbacks to that period where, you know, for years, Monster Bucks DVDs and Realtree's DVDs and Drury's DVDs and all those DVDs sold really well in those retailers. And then TV started to pick up and gain a lot of traction. And that was the new format and the new road. And then those DVDs started collecting dust. And I was bebopping around in a piece of crap car trying to, you know, get these DVDs into the sports shops. And most of them, I think, that I landed them, they just felt bad for me. I mean, I always got the pitch like, you know, we can't even move the big guys' DVDs anymore, you know, because they put their content on TV, you know, and they were blowing up there. So why are people going to go, you know, buy their DVD? But they gave me a shot. A lot of them gave me a shot and people seemed to really like it. And like the format where it was just unscripted and whatever happens. There was no format to it, and there's some definite challenges in producing that and building a good story when you're running on that, because if it's true unscripted, which means it's off the cuff, which means there's no formulated story in the head, even it's just completely running wild off the cuff. It's very difficult to make sure you film all the necessary things that you need along the way in case a story ever develops. Then it's a pain, you know, you got a mountain of content to sift through to build your story out of, but that's what ends up yielding what it does. I guess I got maybe a little bit sidetracked, but
there was
definitely like, you need to, you know, focus TV, you know, DVDs are going by the wayside, you know, and I didn't know if that was true or not, but I couldn't get on a TV show. I mean, how was I going to round up sponsors when I have no following?
Yeah. It's kind of this weird chicken or egg thing out of the gate. Like if you're going to join a network show, which by the way, nowadays, like that model is like, for lack of better terms, it's fucked. Like I don't know why I can't comprehend personally in 2024 why you'd pay a network a bunch of dollars to get on the network, then go pitch a bunch of sponsors to help fund the network when no one's watching cable TV. The cord has been cut. That's not like a thing anymore.
Right.
I think back in 2007, 2008.
You know what are though?
I'm out of
DVDs. No, I had to cut you off and say it. Oh, it's all good. One more thing too. You know, I didn't like the idea of the sponsored route. I liked the idea of the customer paying for it. I kind of had a mentality back then, and I forgot about it along the way. But I remember in those early days, and it didn't change how I produced moving forward. It hasn't affected me, but I didn't recall this until, I don't know, sometime in the last 6 months. But I remember it being very important to me in the beginning. I felt that held me to a standard that I had to produce something that was worthwhile that people were going to pay for and were willing to pay for. So that kept me in check to produce a better quality product. Now I might've gotten carried away over the years and put too much time and effort into them along the ways, but that's part of who I am.
That's how that's just part of who you are. Then that there's no getting around that.
Right.
But we're like, did you start with the end in mind? Like knowing it's something that you wanted to do full time, or like you talk about being the scrappy young kid rolling around in a beater, pitching, you know, retail shops, you know, like, hey, carry my DVD in your store. Like where from the beginning to where you're at now, did you make, I'm assuming you had a job, like where did that leap take place? Because that, when I say it's a long play bet to take the bet and say, I'm going to have people pay for these and not get sponsors. I think the sponsorship road is the easy way out. I don't want to say out, but like, when I say those dollars are unreliable, like advertising dollars are the first things that get cut in business. So like,
I don't think
it's not stable from a business standpoint that you could like, now I'm going to quit my job because we landed a big sponsor. Yeah. And the next year they bail. Cause like whatever happens, COVID or anything else. So I just was curious about like, were you all in from the get or yes. did it? Okay.
Yes. There was a couple that I was considering potentially, if it seemed right, I would potentially consider. One was Jack Links, because what are you gonna, you know, it's like we could be snack packing out there. And Jack is a relation of mine. And I remember when I was 17, Jack, at the family reunion, Jack took me around his ranch up in Minong. And he wanted to hire me for the summer to come up there. I'd live at the cabin and work on the ranch. And unfortunately, I grew up on a dairy farm and my dad didn't like that idea, taking his help off. But I loved the idea. I mean, it's Jack Lick, you know, and it was cool. He, you know, let me catch a trout out of his pond and took me through his trophy room there. And actually, I think I haven't seen Jack since then, except for I think one time I popped in there. The reunion's kind of phased out. But for years, we'd go up there every year for the reunion on a lake just outside of Minong. And Jack was as humble and down to earth as you could imagine. And so I thought, well, that could be a possible sponsorship that would actually work. It would allow, like, I'm not.
Yeah, it's agnostic. Yeah, you're not married to like this bow company or whatever. You can still make all your own choices. And eating Jack Links, of course, like those are always a ready available snack.
So that was one. I remember before we produced the first one, I had two things I wanted to do. I wanted to launch an all public land series. Jim and I had talked about it a little bit more. After we produced the first one, I say we, because in the beginning, Jim was like, I'll be a partner in it, you know, and just Jim being Jim. But after he saw how much work and he wasn't bringing anything to the table, and he knew that and I knew that, and I wasn't anything to the table outside of the entertainment value of
being a character. I remember him. Yeah.
And he's like, you know what, Jared, this is your baby. You run with it. You know, I had still loved to come hunting and do that. So that's how that all went. So I say Jim and I, because, you know, I mean, Jim also, he was like, you know, I was kind of like, I had the camera equipment and all of that. And, the way my memory is, I didn't really like the scripted formats of hunting you know, what I was seeing back there. I didn't like that. Jim, I think I remember, said something to me. Well, hell, let's just go hunting and have a good time, and whatever you got, you got. In the back of my head, I wasn't nearly as good at the storytelling editing end of it back then, but I was a little bit like, well, I'm not sure how this is going to go. Like, what am I going to have for a story? You know, a storyline film, and how Jim described, but I liked the freedom of what, like I said, as my memory is, I think Jim is the one that mentioned it. I took the whole year, the year before, off from filming. Sorry about that.
Oh, you called it. That's all right.
So I took the whole year, the year before, off from filming. I was kind of going through a bit of a burnout. I didn't feel, you know, in 05, I just didn't feel like I had the urge to go hunting like I always did. And I didn't know if it was the camera taken away from it or what it was exactly. So I took all of 06 and just didn't film, just did kind of a reset. Shot a buck off that I headed off on the ground. It was a pretty cool hunt. And here again, it was the smallest buck I had shot with my bow since the first buck I shot, but it fired me up. And it taught me a lot right there in that moment. Wow, that jacked me up, you know. And I was a little bit consumed with trophy, but you know, big, and big inches, and you know, that for a short period of time there, for a few years, and that kind of reset me. In that 06 season, reset me in a lot of ways. And so when Jim said, the way I remember him saying, well, let's just go film it and see what happens, that sounded really good. I'll get a new light.
No worries.
That sounded good to me. I didn't know what that looked like on the other end. And we weren't even dead set on, or I guess I wasn't dead set that Jim and I talked, obviously I'm going to be doing the editing on it. I wasn't even sure I was going to. And then we filmed the entire 07, and that I didn't start editing until I lost my job. It was around the third week of March the following year. I lost my job and I went straight home and started editing. I said, well, maybe this is what I'm supposed to do. And I started editing that video, and that was around midnight. I suppose I got home probably 12:30 in the morning and kicked it off right there. And I remember I was living in a big two-story house, and I was upstairs. That's where my computer was. And I started editing, and I edited all the way into the next day. And the sun was down before I went downstairs to get a glass of water.
So you were in like that flow state or whatever. Yeah. You were in it.
I was into it. I'm going to figure this out.
What were you using to edit back then?
I was using software. Premiere Pro.
Oh, rock on. And were you self-taught? Did you like,
cause
you grew up on a farm.
Yep.
So like you're doing tours on a farm. Now you're in Adobe Premiere.
Yeah.
Like how did you, this is a bit of an aside, and it's fine to take the small path, but like your work ethic's got to be just fucking insane because of being growing up on a farm. Like your work's got to get done. It's probably just instilled in you. But then Adobe Premiere it can get deep as you want it to. It's no After Effects, but it's a hog to learn, and it's a paid thing.
Yeah. I bought my first computer in 04, and it was a Dell for $1,500.
Big investment back in the day. Yeah.
Yeah. The whole thing, monitor, everything, $1,500. And I forget what software it was for editing. I started on that, and then I made the jump before, producing this, I made the jump to start to learn Premiere Pro, and I bought a whole bunch of, there was a company called Total Training that was producing all these DVDs. I invested about $1,000 in Total Training DVDs to learn and get up to speed, because you didn't have what you got now where you just click on YouTube and how do I do this? You know?
Yeah, good point. You had to take a course. Yeah.
You had to buy the DVDs on the training to learn it. And that first video got produced on that computer.
That's awesome. Wow. So, you know, in terms of like, I don't know, I think I kind of mentioned this before, that the counterculture thing. Like you were doing something that wasn't really being done at that point in time. And I think when I stumbled upon you guys, I don't remember how it went, or how I had discovered you, but I shared it with everybody I came across. Like I was working at a computer marketing business and we had a retail storefront that sold computers. And then I eventually just dove into the marketing world. But I remember showing anyone that would listen, like if you haven't seen Whitetail Adrenaline and you haven't seen this, I'd go to your YouTube, show them the little clip previews that you had. And they'd be like, holy shit, right, your heart's beating fast right now from watching this, isn't it? Like people would buy your DVD. I would sell your DVDs working for a different employer trying to sell computers because I was just like, it was so unique. Yeah, whatever. It's so silly. But like that was the impact and effect you had on people doing that, the spot and stock kind of stuff. And public land, the narrative has evolved over time. Like I remember growing up with my dad and like public land had a
bad rep.
I wouldn't say a negative stigma, but like private land was the thing you wanted to be doing. And we were on public land because we didn't have private land. We didn't have the kind of dollars to go lease or buy land. So we were left with the scraps and we made the best use of it. Then it got this narrative of like, it's a badge of honor, public land owner, yada, yada. Now it's crowded.
It kind of transitioned. It went through that kind of negative, like all I got's public, I lost my private, or that's all I can afford. It transitioned. I think people transition, you know, mentality shift. Then it kind of like, oh, this is kind of cool. And then now, if it's not careful, then it becomes too much of a... it goes too far the other way, though. I think that's one thing I was worried about for years is too much like, oh, I shot mine on public, you know, like almost like I shot a 180, you only shot a 170 kind of.
Well, yeah, maybe a 120 on public is like a 180 on private. Like there's,
I mean, you have an internal satisfaction that you did it on public land, but I didn't like the idea of, I'm not really big on group identities.
I love that, man, because that is
the group identity should be your individual identity, I guess.
We battle with that. That's kind of the narrative. We try to, I don't want to say we fight the good fight, but like we're definitely what I kind of mentioned to you before we started recording, like we are the relief valve to the ego in the industry to some degree. And I think everyone has an ego. It's not to say it's bad or whatnot. Too much can be a problem. And there's some sort of inherent ego that goes along with killing a mature buck that you kind of like start to think you're more important maybe than you are. Yeah. Like
forget you're human.
Like, you got to take it. So like you've done a really good job, but we were watching the DVDs in the hotel and the Dells during the trade show or after the trade show. I went and bought a DVD player and plugged in the hotel computer or TV. And Matt Strime, who was with us at the booth, he was like, first of all, he's a ground hunter. He's through and through. Like, that's just how he's always been hunting. So he's like, holy shit, I didn't realize there were other people doing this stuff out here. Like, he had never discovered you guys. Uh-huh. He's about I'm 38. I think he's 38, somewhere in that general range. And he's like, I really appreciate how these guys have shown all the trials and tribulations that have gone into it, all the failed attempts, the shot over the back, the miss here, the miss there. Like, even taking shots in moments where, like, you might be judged for taking that shot. But in the moment, we all know that that moment is fleeting and hard to like react in the moment. It's like the, what's that saying? Like, of course people in the stands are going to judge a guy in the field. Like,
yeah,
you know, oh, you should have thrown that pass, Mr. You know, Aaron Rodgers or whoever the quarterback love. Like, yeah, but you're not playing the fucking game. It's different when you're playing the game. When you're in it, you're in it. It's different. And so there's just this respect that we were kind of having in the hotel room watching you guys that you had said too, like, I get excited for the hunt, not necessarily the deer. And so you mentioned like that year 06 when you took a break and you had shot a smaller deer than what maybe you'd wanted, that was exciting. And we've heard from people in our direct messages and emails and so forth, like a number, like more people than I can count, that have said, I wouldn't have shot a deer if I didn't find you guys, because they almost feel as though, not that they need permission, but like there's so much pressure to shoot a 150 plus that like if they shoot something subpar from that, then they don't feel that, you know, they're they they shouldn't have shot it. They won't shoot it. And now they feel like, oh, I need to take the pressure off a little bit. So that, there's a lot of pressure that's put on to impress people you don't know that you don't might not even like or anything like that for what? The social media realm is interesting.
Essentially, that's living under the rule of another human being. And I don't think that's wise to do that unless what they have to, unless they have a point that is actually maybe bad for other people, I guess. You know, a lot of people get social anxieties too from worrying too much about what other people are going to think, and it starts to affect self-esteem and all those things, you know. But if what you're doing isn't truly harmful to somebody else, I don't think people should worry about it too much. You know, if that buck comes in and you're like, I want to shoot that buck and put meat in the freezer or whatever, you know, I mean, I don't think somebody should get, you know, worry too much about what other people are going to think of them.
That goes along the lines of he wasn't the biggest buck.
It's a dangerous road to do that. Not just for that reason, but so that's what I think about that.
No, I kind of gathered that you would, and I think, you know, you've done. I don't know that you. I don't. Maybe you do realize, but like you are. Man, I don't know. This is gonna be a bold statement, and in a positive way. This is not. I'm not gonna like say something that's gonna catch you off guard. You're like, man, I'm gonna hang up on this podcast right now. But like, to me, honestly, sincerely, you're like the modern day Fred Bear of the hunting industry. Like, you've done something so special and unique that like you've paved a way that has created. Like, you guys have a cult like following it, as you should. And I think, you know, I mentioned you're like a grandmaster chess player, but in the deer hunting sense, that like it, I've said this word on the other on other podcast, eudaimonia. It's a philosophical term that talks about like being the equivalent of a grandmaster. You get so good at something because you live and breathe it every day. It's like the 10,000 hour rule from like Malcolm Gladwell. Like, yeah. I think you've crossed that threshold a little bit, and the fact that then you're still humble in nature and you don't have a lot of like huge ego and you're, you know, you have humility. Those are all like things that everyone should aspire to be like. And you have a confidence about you having done all this for so long that I think it's just such a healthy thing for the industry. So I hope that people are willing to go buy what I've heard called a white tail adrenaline machine versus a DVD player and consume it.
It is a DVD player. It's 20. I wish I could remember the model. It's about $35 on Amazon. I also get the, or $38, I think, for that one. And I or $39.99, maybe it is. It's right there. Basically, I get the HDMI cables. I include that. I charge 50 or 60, 50 at the show, 60 online. I think I got $48 plus the hassle of getting the guys to sign them and all that. I don't make crap on the machines. That's what it is. You can Amazon them and buy them too.
I walked into Walmart and got one
the
for
upscaling cheap. Sony, the upscaling res Sony. So there is a cheaper model that's like 30, but I go for the $39.99 one.
Yeah, that's good to know. Well, so like, I don't know. I can't say enough good things. I really appreciate and respect and admire what you've done. And I think it's important for people in the category to like, you know, if they haven't heard of you, haven't watched, like you're going to really appreciate the stuff you put out, which by the way, man, like, how did you come across Tanner? Who is he? He looks like a hobbit, and he's hysterical.
Yeah. I've been blessed to meet a lot of great people over the years. Gone to quite a few of them from different shows over the years. And then just around, you know, I don't know. My friends are spread out throughout the country, just very unique. Yeah, you know, I always knew I was quite a bit different than the norm. It took me a long time to just accept that I'm not normal. And yeah. So I guess as far as Tanner goes, I vaguely remember meeting him in Pennsylvania at a show. I was probably drinking pretty heavy from the way I remember him describing it. And then, he came on a Sunday to the Iowa show, and we hit it off in about 5 minutes. And I knew within 5 minutes, I like this cat. And that's generally, it usually doesn't take me too much time like it was like 5 minutes with Tanner, and I was like, that guy's not only a good hunter, it takes the right person on camera to drive that type of format that we do.
The amount of times Chancey was
the same way. I met him at a show. He come up hitting on a blonde girlfriend I had at the time, but he didn't see me, and I come up. I forgot all about it. He shared that on a podcast. I don't know, three, four.
You guys have good taste. Like, okay.
He got asked how we met, and he remembered it, and it jarred my memory. I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. You know, but we hit it off and connected really well at that show and stayed in touch and became really good friends. Like, he's one of my best friends. I got several. So
he does some cool artwork too with the painting on we're lucky enough
which
to
we still have to draw Ohio and Iowa. I talked to him earlier today. I was like, hey, time got away from me. You were gone last. He went to a Bass,
Bass Master Classic was last weekend.
And
Justin Hamner won the whole thing.
I got the tickets for the drawings for the feather paintings. Anyways,
that's cool. Well, no, they're very, very, like very big personalities though. Like,
yes,
Chancey, very big, very colorful, you know, really, really entertaining to watch for a number of reasons.
He's one of a kind.
Yeah. Yeah. Really, like, really good people. Like, it's hard to find those types of folks to surround yourself with that can kind of match your, I really do. Like, I just read Ego is the Enemy too many effing times. Like, I read it like 9 times in the last 2 years by Ryan Holiday. And now everything I think about, I put this lens of ego on it. And like, it's very clear that the folks that you roll with don't have that problem. Like, or they don't have enough insecurity to like tip the scale to this other direction where they're like defending weird things that like no one cares about. Like, it's really great that they're so comfortable in their skin that they can be unapologetically themselves, which is what you need.
Yeah.
To have someone behind a camera like that.
Well, yeah. And as far as the ego, I think one of the best checkers of the ego is to be able to recognize the faults that you have within you. You know, the person, whatever area that falls into, I think that keeps a person grounded very well. And there's always more and more. You can conquer this fault, whether it's something, a fault in the body of shooting or a fault of behavior or whatever it is. It takes a lot of work, takes a lot of effort, but it also keeps you grounded, you know, and it's like you go through this process of when it comes to that. To others, it might look like when you're really focused, like I went through some things, you know, the past few years, and I had to take a lot of time and focus that back on me a lot, not for the wrong reasons, though. It was to try to work through a lot of different things that I could recognize I didn't like, and you know, whatever they might be, you know, some are definitely, you know, in shooting a bow and arrow, but you know, it's hard for sometimes people on the outside to see. You can become to look maybe too self-absorbed, but you can't conquer that unless you're really conscious of what you're doing. And then eventually you're just instincts take over and a new behavior develops or a new, all of a sudden the body's doing what it's supposed to automatically with the bow and arrow or whatever, you know, that's how it works. So got kind of sidetracked there a little bit, but maybe on that, but you had brought up the ego thing a few times and I just
thought, I can't help it. Yeah. It's like,
I'd kind of share my perspective on it. You know, it's like, I got enough to work on over here. I don't need to worry about what everybody else is doing wrong, you know? So.
That's fair. And this concept of folks, you know, worrying about that, it's almost like things are not a light switch. You have to almost go, like, just like you wouldn't, we never listen to our parents. We always have to learn things the hard way. Like, sometimes you just have to go through shit to come out the other end to realize certain things. Like, I think we've all been through there's something known as the hunter's, like, stages of deer hunting. There's different stages of deer hunting. Like, there's the beginner, the shoot everything, the woodsman. Like, there's stage that you go through, and you don't go through them in this order of priority. Like, you might be at one stage here, another stage there. Like, I've talked about a lot. I have 3 children under the age of 6, a career and a side hustle, and I have to live with the reality that, like, killing a mature buck takes an amount of effort, time, and energy in the woods that I do not have. It's unrealistic for me to expect that I will shoot a mature buck unless I'm just getting really lucky. I've been able to compound knowledge over the years where I've gotten a lot better with the time that I have, but it's still super limited. And so, like, I'm going to be pretty disappointed every season if I think I'm going to shoot a huge deer all the time. Like, I have to just recognize that and realize this is a season of life where this is not going to be my priority. It's just not going to be.
Yeah.
And some people, not that it's bad, but like, some people might have an unrealistic expectation of what they want to get done because, like, oh, I've listened to this podcast, I've watched these YouTube videos, I've studied these topo maps on the Spartan Forge app. Why am I not killing a big buck like this person on social media? As I see all these people tagging huge deer, it's like, I don't go watch Whitetail Adrenaline. Realize that if they weren't doing it full time and they didn't have like 10 at bats at that buck, they might not have gotten it done. Because like I might only get one at bat, and then that's the end of it. You know, right. I don't have follow up attempts. You know, like the track job that Tanner put on that one buck was absolutely insane. That guy is a psychopath when it comes to tracking a deer. It was so impressive, but also
it was impressive for me as I was editing it. I was like,
how does he find that speck of blood? Like, holy shit. And the tenacity and determination he had to stick with it.
Yeah, and he wasn't even the one that shot it.
It was insane. Like, I'm like, dude, there's no way. There's so many other people that have fallen off. Like, there's, like, stages and, like, you know, like, there's people that just would have, like, fallen off at different stages of that whole process.
Yeah, I mean, it's a high neck shot. I mean, generally, that doesn't end well, you know, for a lot of guys. So
you did call it though. You're like, I think you got a dead deer. So technically you were right. Like right out of the,
it was hard to tell. Cause as the arrow was coming in, he was turning his whole neck and it was really hard to tell, but it looked to me like by the time the broadhead came out the other side, his neck might've gotten hit and he might've gotten lower.
I'd never heard. That was the first time I heard.
Turned out it didn't hit low though. It didn't. So
when you look at the shot placement, but I had never heard someone say, keep that deer running.
Oh, so, really?
Like I've never heard it. I'm still like coming to a lot of things here. Like I'm, you know,
depends on the hit. That's relative to where you hit the, I mean, there's times you follow the old rule of when in doubt back out, but
that kind of
came along. I think, you know, I think that came along more 20 years ago. Especially not anybody's fault, but if you got 1,000 acres that you own and nobody else can hunt it and you gut shoot a deer, yeah, you should probably let it go, you know, overnight and do that whole thing. And in a lot of the cases over the years, I think there's been, I don't know, 3-4 that we've gut shot, maybe more. I don't know. Maybe it's been 5 or 6. Generally, we do give those overnight. We read the situation. You know, if we feel like a bunch of pheasant hunters are going to come in there and blow it up by the end of the day, or so, let's say it's early afternoon, you know, it's going to take 10, 12 hours. You know, we kind of consider the situation. So there's a lot of relative factors. Where the animal is hit is definitely number one. Like, okay, are we going to run it and get on it right away and consider, you know, knowing we're probably going to need a follow-up shot? Or is it something that this deer isn't going to survive, but it's going to be 12 hours. We've got very little acreage to play on. Maybe the game laws don't allow us to cross onto private, even with blood. There's a lot of relative factors to the decision-making when an animal isn't hit right where we want it. So,
no, that's a good point to make, is that it is relative to this. Every situation is unique, but that was really fascinating. And his confidence in like, hey, it's probably bedded here, it went there, it's tracking this way, and then he was right about everything. Like, man, this guy is he's a beast.
Yeah,
like I actually
maybe the way it looks read the situation wrong. They kind of described it to me. I'm like, well, it's pretty wide open there. I was like, you bumped him late in the afternoon, that's two bumps in the same day. You bump them once more.
Oops.
I was like, you bump him once more, and then he's going to get wherever he gets by the end of the night. But now he knows you're hunting him. He's going to relocate to where you don't know where he's at by morning. But if you leave him the rest of the day, because by that point, he's been alive for over 24 hours. He's probably not dying. on his, he's probably going to live unless there's a follow-up shot. So that's why I made that decision. Sometimes things don't get explained in the video, or you don't have time to include everything or whatever, but that's why I made that call. And unfortunately it turned out they don't know if the animal died overnight or coyotes. Definitely coyotes have gotten to the deer. Just don't know the circumstances there. But I had to eat that one a little bit, you know? So.
Yeah, well, it's hard. Yeah, you could see you were obviously editing, like, back home and trying to, like, make the
– I would have made the same call after I seen the footage. I would have made the same decision if I was there. If it was my decision to make, I would have made the same decision, because I think most of the times in that open country, that would have been the right decision. But in that case, not. So. Yeah.
Man, though, you guys, like, the okayness that runs through your veins, like, we have a submission site, a form on our site for people to submit what we call okayest moments, where it's like, I forgot my release, I dropped this, I, you know, all the shit, like, failure is our best teacher. We learn, like, going back to the example, not listening to our folks growing up, like, you eventually go through that thing on your own, and now it's locked in, it's soldered in your mind, like, okay, won't make that mistake again. Well, hopefully you won't. Like, if you keep making the same mistakes all the time, like, it's a different definition. I think it's insanity. But if you learn from your mistakes, like Tanner, like, lock the keys in the van and shit like that, it's like, oh my God, the blunders that you guys have as a team. OKS Hunter, we launched in what year is it? 2024? Dude, like, I am so confused about A, the day of the week, and B, what year it is. But in 2023, in March, we took a stab at making a hunting show. We've been doing this podcast thing for a while. We got, you know, stuff going, and I was like, let's try to do it, but I'm not going to do a self film thing. Like, I have a hard enough time shooting a deer as it is. Like, the last thing I need to be worried about is turning a freaking camera on at the right time or whatever. Like, I'm just not going to do that. So I reached out to some folks, and then through the grapevine, people that I know, I got this guy, Jay Smartinetto, super good dude, lives in Duluth, Minnesota. He does some filming for shows that are on the TV stuff. And he's a producer. Like, he went to film school, did all the stuff. And so we bring him along, and he's like, so how do you want this to go, Eric? Like, what do you want this show to be? I'm like, well, I don't want an over-dramatized gladiator running his hand over the top of the grass. Like, it's deer hunting. It doesn't need to be that dramatic. I do want the quality to be there. I want the filming of it to look sharp and crisp, but I don't want the drama, the dramatic nature of it.
You don't want to force it.
Yeah, I was like, so much like you, I was kind of like, and without even realizing, I was like, unscripted, like, let's just go do what we do. You run the cameras, and then let's determine what the story arc is from there. I don't care about, I'm not going to bend a storyline out of nothing. I don't know how the season's going to go. So much like people say, like, good luck on the hunt. Yeah, we'll see how it goes. Like, oh, we'll see how it goes. I'm like, we're also going to see how this goes as an endeavor. So we deemed our first season, we'll see how it goes. And I described it to Jace as, like, I want this to be like The Office, but deer hunting. So the only bend I want to put on this is, like, we're going to do some interviews in the studio, and we're going to, like, talk about, we're going to do some predictions before we start doing shit. And then we'll check in as we're doing it, and we'll check in after we're doing it. And then you pick how you want to lay all that out. And so he put the producer hat on, and he did. He put the whole thing together. And, I have a respect for that, because there is an art to building a story arc and narrative. And you've done a really, like, seeing, like, all the credits, like, producer Jared Scheffler, Jared Scheffler, like, you see your name on there, not because of ego, but because, like, you're literally doing that stuff. And to consume all that content that you guys have is a fucking mountain compared to the molehill we have. Like, holy shit, man.
Yeah,
it's insane. I was just telling the guys, I was like, we're watching the hotel, and I was like, pay attention real quick, pay attention to all the cuts, pay attention to the audio. Like, the only way to get good audio is you have to go listen to it. You like the circus music, you have to go find those clips, you have to know when to apply them, when to start it, when the beat drops, it's going to get heavy, like all the cuts, like the amount of effort, time, energy, and, like, honestly, it's a beautiful thing what you've done, man. Like, we did a tiny, tiny thing. Our episodes are 8 to 12, 15 minutes long, and there's only a handful of them. And we have one season under a belt. And I wasn't even the one doing the work. I was just the dipshit that he was recording. Like, holy cow. So I only say all that to say, not to talk about what we're doing, but more so to relate to, like, how complex it is what it is you're doing. It's, and so seeing all your IG updates, like, hey guys, I'm still editing. Like, man, I was
very hard. And it's very hard to predict, you know, when you're going to have that type of production done, because it requires so much work to, for it to turn into what it is. But that's also why, you know, it's got its own, like a normal product you can take and you can take a look at it. Yep, we can manufacture.
Here's the template, or here's the, yeah.
Exactly. There is no template. So, you know, it's really challenging to, I don't want to say replace myself, but it's really, if there was another production out there that was produced to that level of production quality that also had all, then I could be like, hey, that guy knows how to do this. And I could, at least to a higher degree, get it. But it's very difficult. I mean, it is. It's,
when even the executive decisions about what makes the cut or what doesn't make the cut, like, I don't know that someone else would do a better job than you with your stuff. Like, you know what needs to stay in there and what should get lopped out. That in and of itself is hard, because it could. So I took 3 years of fine art in high school, and I was going to go to college for it. I didn't. I ended up making a different decision in life, which led me down a very different path. But I remember doing portraits. And if you changed one fucking crease of someone's face, the whole expression changed.
Yeah.
And so doing portrait self or otherwise, I was like, man, this feels so difficult. If I change one tiny aspect, either intentionally or unintentionally, the whole expression of their face changes. If I keep this clip or delete that clip, the whole storyline shifts. Like you mentioned, like I might not have this piece recorded, or I might not have this. So then how do you tell that story without the piece, or how do you add this one in to get the message across that you're trying to? Like,
yeah,
that's all really hard stuff.
It's a lot. Yeah. You know, and there's around 15,000 cuts. I'll get the exact number in Uncuffed. And
oh my
you
God.
Can only imagine how many got removed along the way, but it far, far exceeds.
Might be four cameras all on at the same time for one scene. It's even a matter of like determining which camera angle you want to present in that scene is a challenge.
Yeah, that's not as difficult as the selecting. Do I need this? Do I not? Okay. Does this flow from this shot to that? Does it actually add value? I mean, hundreds of thousands of cuts get removed over the course of a project like this. And you haven't even started doing the audio yet. You haven't started doing the,
oh my gosh,
the picture color yet. And, you know, in the end it yields a product that it's like, well, can't, you know, I hear it I'm just going to repeat what I hear from a lot of people. I can't get this somewhere else, you know? And so it's like, yeah, it's DVD format, but hey, you know, we've cornered the market on DVDs. I, to my knowledge, we are the last Hunting production on DVD. So
but that's the beauty of it, though, so, Jared. Like, I mean, you're not,
get your DVDs. Where are you going to get, like, a Hunting DVD?
I love it. No, like, no one, YouTube. You're not going to get demonetized by YouTube. You're not beholden to a platform. You're not beholden to sponsorship. Like, that gives you, as long as you're doing enough business, you can continue to do this thing for as long as you want. You're like, yeah, Lee Ellis with the Sneak One, but like, they got demonetized last year for a hot second. YouTube said, we're not going to pay you because you have hunting content.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that was a scary day for him, you know?
And we are planning to, you know, get all the films and stuff on digital format too. It's just, that's a lot of work. It costs actually a lot of money. It's not as simple as just upload it.
Well, how many terabytes? Like, how do you, like, you can't just roll into Apple TV and be like, hey, let's drop this shit. Like, the bandwidth to do that, like, blows. I'm like, no wonder it's not as simple as like, hey, can't you just put this on Netflix or Apple or something? It's like, well, you don't even comprehend the complexity of what that'll take.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's, if it was that simple, I would do offer that. Yeah. So, I mean, in a perfect world, I'd be able to host it and everything right on my website, whatever, and people pay for the film on there, and boom, if it was that simple.
The Meat Eater does that, but also they have, you know, a lot of money and capital.
Yeah, and they're very well connected with other resources and places, you know.
But their shit's also not 7 discs long, and not to say it's not a knock on you, but for anybody that's listening who's done self-filming or has a YouTube channel, like, how long does it take to upload an hour-long video, let alone 15 hours worth? Like, good luck.
Yeah. You know,
that's a long, 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 long upload time. And that's not even, like, again, I'm just trying to paint the picture for people that, like, this is not as simple as, like, can't you just do this? Or why don't you just do that?
Yeah, I really couldn't justify putting this level of effort and work into the production and putting it on YouTube. Because to play well with YouTube, you have to upload content regularly.
Yeah.
And so I'd have to degrade the quality of what I'm producing, which it wouldn't be the same anymore. And I wouldn't find any value in that. So it doesn't really fit for the hunts. You know, I could go do a really high quality how-to video and whip that out in no time. That's different. You've got a set storyline. You know, maybe it's in your head what you want to talk about, but you don't have mountains and mountains of guys rambling about shit that doesn't matter. That's, you know, to sort through and try to make it all flow and get rid of the unnecessary parts. And you know, it's totally different world. And you're controlling all the elements. You're getting the lighting set right. Your audio. You're not fighting 40 mile an hour winds and a guy whispering and trying to make it sound like you're right there. You know, I mean, totally different type of production. Yeah.
So how much time are you? Are you even getting to hunt anymore these days at all, given the workload you have to produce this beast? Like, what is your model morphed into now? Like, are you, like, you have Tanner, you have Chance, you have some other personalities, which I think is smart just in general, like from a diversification standpoint, but you're still the GOAT. Like, I still love to watch you in your element out there. You know, I enjoy watching you hunt. I enjoy, like, you, I never in my life would have thought a fucking buck would be watching a coyote to look for danger. The coyote is the danger. And you show me that these deer are, like, setting themselves up to be in the absolute perfect position. And the older, mature ones are super, super savvy at surviving in a way that, until you watch what you do, like, you pick them apart. But you still got to put in the work and get there. And it's proven to be insanely difficult. And you've had some good results there. But sometimes they kick your ass. And
right.
I enjoy, from a tactical standpoint, watching you play that chess game with these bucks. I don't see that anywhere else. I see the how-to videos. I see you. It's like learning on the job versus learning from a professor. Like, if you're going to speak to me about how to do it, it's different than if I watch someone literally do it.
Yeah. First of all, I love having all the characters on the video, but that also requires a lot of work to edit and produce it. So, yeah, people haven't seen me on the videos as much over the last few years. My future plans are to scale that back to smaller scale productions, focus more on bow stuff. Just not that I don't like gun, but bow. I've always loved to gun hunt too. I want to film it all, and I want to film this hunt, and I want to film that hunt, and hey, I want this character in there, and I want that character in there, and I want this guy, and you know what I mean? And it just takes too much work to produce. You know, and Uncuffed got really, really, really big. So that's kind of my future plans on the production side there.
That's good to hear, man. Genuinely excited to see you and then hunting more.
As far as what you were talking about, is I've gotten sharpened quite a bit over the years just from editing all these hunts.
And good way to say it. Yeah.
Picking things up that, and not only just, sometimes you're not just picking it up. You already knew that happened. You were there for that hunt and you knew what happened, but it gets burned into your brain. It gets baked in what went wrong. It's not you're reliving it again and again and again. And maybe you're reliving this guy's mistake or what went wrong. Maybe he didn't make a mistake. Maybe unfortunate circumstances happened, you know. So I feel like I guess sometimes when you don't hunt for 9 months and then hunting season starts, you relive some of those faults and mistakes for a bit again.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're like, okay, I'm into the season. I got through that. You kind of relive them. Not as bad as you did maybe earlier in your days of hunting, but I come in pretty well oiled, and Tanner picked up on that. I think in 2021, I came in pretty well oiled, and he's like, what the heck? You know? And I'm like, you got to remember how many hours I've spent behind a computer reliving all these mistakes that I made and all these things that went wrong or whatever.
It's compounded. That's fascinating, Jared. Like, yeah, it's one thing to be in the woods all the time doing this as a career. It's another to then relive it on the computer screen editing. That's fascinating. I've often said it's like school. You know, our curriculum in the U.S. is go to school from September to June, go on summer break for a few months, come back. But my wife's a teacher, so curriculum is literally the first semester of your year back in school come June is actually relearning a lot of what you just got done learning in Q4 or whatever of last year, because over the summer months, you kind of like lost some of it.
Yeah.
So deer hunting is similar. Like, that's why I think I get so excited about it. It's because you kind of pick up where you left off, but you got to work through all those kinks and you're almost relearning all the shit from last season that you messed up. And it takes a minute to like, how am I hanging my stand again? Like, what are my sticks doing? Like, where am I hunting? What is it? And everything changes year in and year out. Like, hunting pressure changes, the terrain and the topo changes. Like, this tree fell, this got burned, this, you know, tornado buzzed through this area. Like, crops have changed out. This was beans, now it's corn. Like, there's this period of time getting back into the groove of it that like takes a minute.
Yeah.
And by the time you get good again, it's hunting season ends. You're like, shit, just when I was getting good, I got like someone took the damn video game controller away just when I got good again.
Yeah.
And I got to wait 9 months to do this again. Are you freaking kidding me?
Right.
You know, yeah. And that's why my wife, I'm like, I'm trying to tell her, I'm like, this is a game that takes years to develop the muscle for.
Right.
And as soon as you get good or you feel like you're in stride, the game ends and you got to wait 9 months to go play again.
And then, yeah. And
I mean, you can scout. That scouting is a form of hunting, yes, but also like literally the game isn't in session until, you know, September, late August, right, or depending where you're hunting. But
right.
Dude, Wisconsin, that's where I'm from. That's where I hunt. I hunt public. I hunt a lot of like, I don't know, I wouldn't say suburban, but I'm in Oconomowoc in between Milwaukee and Madison. And so for bow hunting, I hunt very locally within, I typically don't travel more than an hour to get to where I'm going because like it's very limited what I can get away with from a time standpoint. What's your advice switching gears to like, I don't know, hey, what's your favorite hunt to state? Oh my God, state to hunt? I think I'm dyslexic. What's your favorite state to hunt? And then what's your advice to someone hunting like the Midwest versus Nebraska, where you have those big open spaces? Like, those are two very different hunts, I think.
Yeah, they are. My favorite state right now is Iowa. I have planed myself out on the plains. I guess that's a new one. I haven't used that terminology
yet. Yeah,
it came to me. I've planed out on the plains. And it's been a while coming. So I'm more, I grew up hunting kind of a variety, but a lot of swamp, tag elder swamp, cattail swamp, some timber, but mainly swamp. And then some prairie grass. That's mainly what I grew up hunting. Some woods in there, but the swamp was more the bigger bulk of what I did. And in the wintertime, you know, I did do some winter scouting back then. It was always the swamp. It was always the swamp I was heading to. And then I started, in my late teens, I started shifting to some focus kind of in my probably 16, 17, 18, right in there. More to open country. There wasn't a lot of plains where I grew up or plain type, you know, but like there was a couple sections that were pretty wide open, you know, and I targeted kind of some of that open area more than I had the swamps earlier. Then I shifted to the timbers and the bluffs and the hills, and that was fun. And then I got hooked on the prairies around that. That would have been Dropping the Hammer video. That would have been 2011, fourth video.
I remember that. Yeah.
Not that I didn't. I mean, I went to North Dakota early season two, even back in 07 and before that. And, you know, that's semi-plains, I guess you'd say. There's broken up woodlots in there and whatnot. And then I got hooked on the plains, and I've done that so much that I started to...
The pendulum has swung back.
Yes.
Yeah.
Pendulum started swinging back to the timber. And, you know, actually what drove me out of the swamps was, I believe that was 20. Ooh, that would have been Reckoning 2, I think.
Okay.
Remember that I got title. Poison sumac so bad. I used to get that going into the swamps.
A lot of sumac in there. Yeah.
Yeah. And I've been highly contagious of it before. And the past like 2-3 times I had went into the swamps, I had gotten it so bad my eye was damn near swelled shut on one of them videos, and I believe it was the Reckoning 2.
Yeah.
And we were doing pretty good in the hills in Wisconsin in the timber. And so that's actually what drove me out of the swamps entirely.
Both hard to hunt for different reasons. Swamps, Greg Tubbs, who is in Florida now, he hunts a tamarack swamp almost exclusively, and he loves it, you know. Yeah. And what a challenging place to hunt, man. For several reasons, but the hills too, like I hunt Wyalusing area, like Grant County, very the like where the Mississippi meets the Wisconsin River, a lot of bluff country, a lot of hills. That's hard too, like when I'm watching, like you guys are doing a lot of spot stalking stuff in those prairies where you can glass these deer almost like you're elk hunting or something in out west, where you're glassing the spot and then make your moves, which is hard in its own right. But like I feel like sometimes whitetail hunting is so ambush style in the timber because they'll pick you off before you ever see them because they blend in so well in the woods. Like how do you make your moves there? That's a whole different, it's so freaking hard.
It's different. I did pretty decent back when we hunted the timbers. That's picking them up before they'd pick me up on doing it. It's a whole nother animal than the prairies. You know, one thing I know for sure, even though I was pretty good at it back when I hunted the timbers, I believe that I'd be better at it now because the prairies really trained my eyes.
You were picking off deer in the grass. So we're like, the cameraman's like, man, I don't know how he's seeing this stuff, but like, holy shit. And I was also like, how in the absolute F did you see that? Yeah. And you're like, if I would have taken one more step, you would have pegged us. And you're probably right. And I'm like, wow, what a skill to have trained over time on it, in the timber. It feels, so my cousin does this thing he called, I don't know if it's an actual term, but I would call it speed scouting. I've gone hunting with him a few times. He's got more of your style. He's got more of, he hunts with a longbow. He's a grandmaster chess player when it comes to deer hunting. Like he's very good. Like I've gone hunting, he's like, I'll only go hunting if the wind's less than 8 miles per hour today. It has to be between like 4 and 8 miles per hour to hunt how I hunt, to see them moving, but still have the wind to your advantage, yada, 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 all this stuff. I love going hunting with him because of how I can learn from him. He's just incredible. No social media, no ego, not a care in the world about any of the things that everyone else is doing. But he's taught me something called speed scouting. He's like, let's just go to this area. We're going to hunt it, but we're going to speed scout it. And he would go through an area so fast. And the way that he would see things, it wasn't that he was going fast, that he was disregarding stuff. He just knew what to look for. And he would tell you, like, this isn't an area that's going to be huntable this time of season. Like, it's not holding anything. that he would want to go after from a mature buck standpoint. And he could then check that property off the list and move on to another one, move on to another one until he zeroed in the property he wanted to hunt. Like, this one is holding deer that I, of the caliber I want to go after. Here's how we're going to hunt it and break it down. And it felt very much like how I think I've watched some of your Hill stuff where you were in the timber and you would like, let's go hunt it. Nothing here. Let's move on. That's something that I don't have that muscle. I don't know what I'm looking for. Now, Derek, who does the show with us, he's one of our co-hosts. He is of that caliber where, like, he'll look at a twig and go, only a buck of this caliber could have bent that twig this way walking through this path. And I'm like, how the fuck did you even see that? What are you talking about? He'll go shed hunting on his way from work to here on a Tuesday for podcast night, and he'll find sheds. And I'm like, dude, I've walked miles forever, and I've never found a single shed. You were just shed hunting for an hour, and you found one? He's like, well, I know where to look because I know what I'm after, and da-da-da-da-da. Just, there's a certain caliber of, like, hunter that exists out there that understands the game and the mechanics and what to look for.
Yeah.
I think you possess that. It's hard to – it's almost like I had professors in college that were so, so smart. They knew their shit so well that it was a blessing to be taught by them, but also they had a really hard time, like, distilling it down and actually bringing it down Barney style to teach. They sucked at teaching. They were so good at what they did that I'm like, but I can't understand. I'm so there's such a big gap here.
You get to a point where you're not doing it really even consciously anymore, and so you can't even hardly.
Yes.
You've crossed that threshold where you can trust your instincts because they're actually. And that's part of recognizing the faults in your what went wrong. Like, in this stock, this failed on me, and I recognize I screwed that up. Pretty soon, after a while, that formulates your deeper instincts, and that also becomes who you are in a hunt or anything else. Mm-hmm. And you're not thinking about it anymore. And then somebody asks, well, how do you do that? what's the magic sauce?
There's no silver bullets. Like, don't get me wrong.
Fail a lot, absorb that. Don't sugarcoat your mistake. And
time in the woods is the one. Just like with business, like time in, showing up. Like, I probably the same principle that can be applied to most walks of life, including deer hunting. But that's why I like watching you, because you're not there to instruct. You're there to do what you do, and if you're paying attention, you can learn a lot by watching your stuff. I think that's really interesting.
You know, one thing we're talking about there a little bit, I haven't really heard people mention it, over the years, but you definitely pick it up if you would look for it now. You'll see a lot of times I come, like in these open countries, I'll come right over the skyline to get my visual, which in the early days, I would have worked the terrain more. So I wasn't skyline, but now I've learned enough. I got it down to a pretty good science over the years. I shouldn't say a science, a pretty good skill ability over the years to where I can do that. I'm comfortable doing that, and very small percentage chance I'm going to get pegged. But I learned working the contours of the land to keep my silhouette out. You end up dealing with a lot of wind problems, and you're not covering as much acreage nearly as quick. So I was like, I got to get good at coming over the top. And so I just thought that popped into my head. That's one that I, even like that, I think you were kind of talking about that one coyote hunt. Well, the coyote blew the buck out, and then a 4-pointer, like big wide fork, like, I don't know, 17, 18 inch wide fork comes in with a doe. Big drop time buck picks it up. They disappear 300-400 yards away. I could have worked the contour to find him back. I chose to come right over the top. And that, I didn't even second guess it. That's how comfortable I've gotten with that method in the plains. I don't have too much anxiety or worry about them spotting me, but that there's some things that can go wrong. I mean, in the early days, I definitely, you know what I mean? Like, you cross thresholds and you figure things out over the years.
Selfishly, I'm asking because I hunt Wisconsin and I hunt timber, but I've personally, and those that have followed along, the wide guy behind me here. I don't know. I can't point. Like everywhere I point is the wrong freaking spot. I think it's like mirroring me or
probably
something.
Probably gonna go opposite direction of what you think.
I think it is. I feel like I'm. Anyway, the wide guy got here was the most bucks and the most big bucks. Those two things combined. That's all occurred for me by river bottoms. And so just because of the success I've seen and where I live and how I can hunt and getting some water access with a solo canoe, that's just where I've been focusing my efforts because I'm getting comfortable and confident there.
Yeah.
I'm not comfortable and confident in a swamp or in big timber anymore because I feel like I've figured out some part of the game. I figured out a little tidbit that I feel like I can kind of bring my confidence to the table, and I've learned enough error from that. Like I've found these areas that are to Derek on our show will say this, like the areas that are really hard to set up in as a hunter typically have a lot of deer, but they're really hard to hunt because they're hard to set up in.
Right.
And Greg, who also does the podcast, talks about like there's give and take. You can give up on maybe how they can spot you or how they could smell you, but there's always some level of give and take. And so last year I gave nothing on wind or scent. I was right by a river basin based on where the wind was blowing. I was already pretty good, but then the river's like pulling my scent in, but I gave up a shit ton on the visual because there was nowhere to set up. And so where I set up, I got pegged visually, but not from a scent standpoint. And I was like, there's that give and take thing. But I'm also now getting eyes on 150 plus inch deer on public land where I'm like, holy shit, I saw that buck two times on two different hunts and I got within range of him. And I'm like, I never thought as the OKS hunter, this would be even remotely possible for me, but I'm starting to put the pieces together. And that for me is a lot of fun. I really enjoy that. I also took a shot at a 2-year-old eight that I was like, would have been super stoked to get, cause I don't actually give a shit. Cause I'm like, my daughter's hounding me for venison. I only have so many hunts I can go on.
Right.
You know, it's all good. Like I'm the guy that does get excited about the hunt, and it doesn't really take that much to get me excited. It just doesn't. The big buck was just extra bonus and affirmation as a hunter. I don't think oftentimes we don't get the affirmation. You could be in the right place at the wrong time and not realize that was the right place.
Right.
Like that buck might've just taken a different path that night and you didn't see him, but you were doing everything right, but you wouldn't have known it. And so then you have to always have this like doubt and second guessing going on in your mind. It's only when that buck shows up that you got the right place, right time. And then the affirmation that, oh, shit, I did do something correctly.
Yeah.
I've had that happen enough times where I think I can place bets, or even if it's not the right time, I was in the right place or whatever. Like, I enjoy that. So, Jared, I'm just saying all this to say, like, I've learned a lot from you by just watching you do what you do rather than you being the YouTuber that says, this is how I would break this property down and da-da-da-da-da. I think you could probably do that. But also, osmosis is pretty powerful, so...
Yeah.
It's cool.
Well, thank you. At least you found value in everything I did wrong, right? Over the years.
At least if that's relatable though, because that's half of what I do. It's mostly the wrong stuff. So like I can appreciate that.
I got plenty of that. You go through these chapters, and we were talking about the swamps and the hills and the trees and the prairies. It's like, there's things, it's a different game. It's a different deal, but you learn things in those settings too, that you can then apply over here. And you that's why I say, I think I come back to timber, makes perfect sense to me. I'll be better at it than I ever was before. For a number of reasons, not just the eyes getting sharper. Now I've learned a lot more how to effectively eliminate acreage based off of conditions that are happening. So I'll be able to do that in the timbers or not as much necessarily in the swamps on the wind side of it. Cattail swamps, they get, you know, it's like they're pretty flat, you know.
So, yeah, they are. Yeah,
they're pretty flat and they're usually pretty thick, so it blocks pretty close to good. So,
yeah,
it's hard to eliminate the acreage just off of some things there, but thanks for sharing that with me.
No, this was good. This is good. I, you know, we're hour and 15 minutes.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody, I haven't been paying much. There's
lots of comments coming through. A lot of it's more just like head nods. Like there's a lot of bobbleheads.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't mean like I had to go right this second or anything. Like,
no, no. Like, well, what happens to me is usually I get an hour before I have to piss like a maniac, because apparently at 38 is when your bladder decides to shrink, or apparently like COVID trained me that I could go pee whenever I want. So my body's like, no, you're not going to hold it anymore. So usually I'm about at my threshold.
Is that a real thing? Like, you got to pee more once you have COVID?
No, not that you have COVID. Here, this is what I mean. Like, so then I got to work from home. And so if my line of my bladder is here, or let's say it's here, as like, so if for those listening, it's very high up. And when I didn't get to go to the bathroom I wanted, it was up here. But now that I'm home and I could just go pee whenever I want, I go pee here. So now that threshold has been lowered.
Gotcha.
So I believe there might be some truth and validity to that, in addition to the fact that I'm also getting older and my bladder is less like, and I could hold my piss for like 2 fucking days in the past. Now I'm like, when I got to go, I'm probably going to pee down both legs right now, is how I feel when I got to go.
You got to go.
It's so weird. And unless I'm moving, if I can move, then I can, like, my brain can like put it off again. Like, oh, we're going to go move around now. I'm not going to pee.
Gotcha.
Wait till you're 57, says David. Yeah. I'm going to have to get a catheter at 57, by the way it's going. So, oh man. No, it's interesting. Like, there's a lot to discuss and talk about. I'd love to have you back on at some point in the future. If you're ever in Wisconsin, you're welcome here in studio. We'll run all the other fancy cameras and stuff.
That'd be fun.
A little bit different setup with us.
I get back to Wisconsin every now and again. That's where I grew up. But moved to Iowa a couple years ago. So,
which has got to be exciting as a deer hunter.
It is. I haven't gotten to really do much hunting here since I moved here. I haven't even bought gun tags since I moved here. Uncuffed was an edit. So.
It'll be cool to see you do that. Well, for those, we didn't get any callers. I kind of suspected, like, sometimes people just don't feel comfortable interrupting the conversation, but enough comments came through. So you're welcome to go back and read all these comments. This is all archived on YouTube and Facebook and all that stuff. So if we missed anything, we can circle back, but I'll put a post produced version of this podcast on YouTube that won't have all the wood and the comments. It'll be full aspect ratio, and I'll, you know, make a nice thumbnail and all that jazz. So for everyone that tuned in, we appreciate it. Thank you very much. Jared, appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule. I know you just got done with a trade show, so your world's probably been rocked just like mine has.
I usually need a couple days to I'm all jacked up, excited to be at the show, and by Sunday I'm sure some people come and they're like, man, he was pretty boring to have a conversation.
Just get wiped out. It's a lot of energy.
But that's also what allows me to suck in behind a computer screen and not have much social in my, you know, I do lean more on the introvert side. So it's like, it's hard to usually after shows, I need a couple of days. It's like you jump in the vehicle, even with your buddies, and you're just
don't
like,
talk to me.
Don't talk to me for like 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Not, you know, it's not anything on anybody other than it's just like, okay, I'm socialized out for a period of time here. Just a second.
I hear that. And it's hard because everyone thinks they know you and you're like, I don't know you at all, but they've watched 15 hours of you potentially. And they're like, man, I feel like I'm right there with you. And they know you because they are like your people or whatever. And it's just it's totally different when you're not that.
Yeah.
You're like, I don't know you at all, but good to meet you. And I'm happy to talk to you.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's what we're there to do. Just sometimes it's like I hit that I'm socialized out point earlier than I'd like to. And I'm just like, it's a struggle for me sometimes to hang in there. I'm always jacked up, like
in the thick of it. It's awesome. Yeah, it's once you get that set up and you're all good, it's like, yeah, let's go.
Usually by Sunday, I'm like, whew, you know, just need a little bit of,
it starts to slow down and you're like, whoo, all right, we can start checking out.
It doesn't really
now,
matter usually too much what the conversation is about or who it's with. I'm just like zonked out. So
yeah, it's a lot.
But then 2 day shows wouldn't be any funny. Yeah, that'd be probably a little too short, you know.
Yeah.
So
no, but these are a lot of energy too, especially back to back. So the podcast stuff, hopefully there's a circuit of them. I'm sure you're on a number of shows, and we appreciate you being on ours. Yeah. It's pretty cool to talk to you under the guise of OK as Hunter, you know, coming from where we were at before.
Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it. I'm glad we were able to do it.
Yeah. So how many, like, obviously there's DVDs for sale.
Yeah.
You can buy them online. You know, I know you do have a Apple TV thing, but maybe that's further down the road for this one. For Uncut.
Yeah, I don't have a date on that yet. Resurgence is a 3-part series, and that is available on iTunes and Amazon for purchase. Otherwise, seasons 1 through 14 are on our website in DVD, which is digital video disc. So, okay, we've been digital a long time. No, yep. Just kidding. Yep. that's on there. There's actually some sets have more than one disc. There's actually, I counted them. I didn't even know how many I had. I've produced 38 discs that average over 2 hours a piece in the Whitetail Adrenaline collection. So, yeah.
But if you want to watch Uncuffed, you can buy it. Go get a DVD player. It's worth it. I promise you, as a deer hunter listening to this, it is well worth it. The real challenge you're going to have is finding 15 hours to dedicate to watch it. And you're going to it's almost like binging like a show, whether that's like, if you remember, if anyone remembers, what's that one with where they did all the drugs with,
Sons of Anarchy.
Sons of Anarchy is a good one. I'm thinking of the one with Walt Whitman, not Walt Whitman, but like whatever, Walter White, like the, oh God, I can't think of the damn name of the show. Probably because I have to pee so bad. Nonetheless, it's binge worthy. And you're going to like, I went to bed dreaming of deer hunting after watching it. I was like so excited on watching it. So
the feedback's been really great on it. Going to the shows, hearing the feedback.
Breaking Bad. Thank you, Calder. Breaking Bad. Why couldn't I do that? Holy shit.
I'm glad it's been worth it. And seems like most people have been very, I've had some that said, hey, I was one of the people that was very not nice on social while it was getting, you know, while it was delayed, but
it's worth it.
I got to say, I loved every minute of it and I can't wait for the next one. And so hearing all that kind of stuff that I think people maybe understood a little bit more too, you know, I really had to see it through to the end of and get it to the quality that I wanted it. And that is what I want to do. So, and I'm sorry, I went back into stuff. You got to pee. And all of a sudden I got it.
I'm just jiggling around over here. I'm sorry, everybody. Yeah. So, thanks everybody for tuning in. We appreciate it. And go buy the DVDs.
Yes. Thank you very much.
All right. End it there. And here. Thanks, everybody.